the new architecture really, I don't know another word for it, but they kiss each other with this really extraordinary histories and futures coming together. So I think it will be thrilling at scale. There's a lovely gift to then start talking about how we co-design and co-create futures that we all care about. If you do identify a preferred future, how do you backcast that and get to it? What do you have to do in the next 12 months that might lead you toward a better future for all?
In the centre of Scotland's capital, the building which used to be the Edinburgh Infirmary has been undergoing a huge renovation. Soon it will open to the public as Edinburgh Futures Institute, a major hub within the data-driven innovation programme as part of the City Region deal at the University of Edinburgh and Heriot Watt University. Here, research, engagement and education will take place using an approach that combines multidisciplinarity with co-production. The projects tackled here will affect the future, and they'll have to consider demonstrable ethical, social, cultural, economic and environmental impacts. I'm Kim McAllister, and I spoke to Chris Speed, the director of the EFI, to find out what we can expect when the hub opens. Chris, thanks so much for talking to me today. I imagine you're extremely busy. How are you feeling about your new role, first of all?
Well, it's a mix of complete bewilderment because the octopus, if you like, has got so many different tentacles and so many different things to stand up. And in some ways, it reminds me of the shape of the building. I'm not sure if everyone's aware, but because it was part of that Florence Nightingale turn toward buildings, hospitals, with contagion wards. So it has these six fingers which reach out, which are rather like the octopus. And each one with teaching, the building itself, the research, the engagement with partners, communities, curriculum. It's all extremely challenging. But then again, whenever you talk about the idea with people, they get terribly excited. So I'm probably a mixture of both. Bewilderment and excitement.
And people have been walking past the old infirmary in Edinburgh for a while now, having a look in and wondering what's going on in there. What do you think will surprise them when it's finally open?
Oh, I do. It is astonishing. And I think there's something, because we went into lockdown, to some extent, I think we thought about other places. So we thought about our bedrooms, our studies, and then we remembered work. But work at the University of Edinburgh might have been our old office. So I think EFI is only just... it's just reminding people as they walk across the city again of what an extraordinary building is. It's at full scale. I think it's hard to imagine 200,000 square feet suddenly becoming part of the Edinburgh teaching, research and engagement ecosystem. So suddenly we'll have more space, everybody. And I think there's something extraordinary in almost realizing that it was a little bit like Edinburgh's Notre Dame, that actually the building was in such an extraordinarily bad state that we've done something, and the contractors and the architects and engineers have done something extraordinary in recovering. And when you walk the old floors with the vaulted roofs, with the beautiful brickwork from 150 years ago through to the brand new infills, which are very high tech, you'll get this extraordinary sense of not just scale, but elegance as the old kisses the new. Because you get these terrific moments when the old is deeply respected, but the new infills, the new architecture really, I don't know another word for it, but they kiss each other with this really extraordinary histories and futures coming together. So I think it will be thrilling at scale, the architecture, the engineering, but also looking forward to the different types of people who walk through the corridors.
Well, it's a bit like Edinburgh itself, isn't it? It's a city full of history and old buildings, and yet we have this future with technology and AI, and I guess that's what the EFI is all about, right?
It is. It's a really good analogy with the city, and I think we want to be super careful in carrying the histories with us as we go into futures. So some of those histories are for providing histories for people who haven't had voice before, so really thinking carefully about which histories we choose to perhaps bring to the fore, and then also whilst treading carefully into envisioning what appropriate futures might be like. So there's this idea around preferred futures, possible futures. I don't think we want the mundane futures. I think we've got lots of skills in using the tricks of the past, all the problems of the past, to be honest, and then forecasting, and then what we call backcasting. So where would we like to be in 10 years' time as a university or a community or a nation? And then deciding on that together with people from all different stakeholder parties, whether it's civic, politics, through engineering, academics, or the community itself, and of course with students at the heart. If you do identify a preferred future, how do you backcast that and get to it? What do you have to do in the next 12 months that might lead you toward a better future for all?
It's an awfully big job you've got there. And I know that you have a background in IoT and emerging technologies. So what's exciting you most about the work that's going on at EFI?
I think about it a lot, actually, because I think what I've been handed, or I've adopted, what EFI has adopted from the city region deal, are four sectors which speak to some of what you're talking about there. The four sectors are fintech and financial services. I tend to put them together. Public services, creative, and then tourism and festivals. And actually, maybe financial services people wouldn't have naturally had a bedfellow such as creative, or festivals, or public services. But actually, all of them speak to really interesting ideas of value. So value could be seen through the lens of economic. It could be seen through the lens of social and the social capital. It could be seen through the lens of cultural, which might combine creative as well as festivals and our experience of the city through tourism. So I think what's fascinating is all of my work in the past has been about the value of data. Does it break values? Does it challenge values? Or can we talk about value in a broader sense than just money? So then when I cast that idea of sophisticated ideas of value onto EFI, we've got these brilliant lenses to which to make sure that when we talk about value, it's social, cultural, environmental, as well as being economic. So for me, it's all about how we talk about value through into the future.
And trust as well, I suppose. Whenever anyone talks about data, there's always the question of trust, whether it's in the data itself and whether it's going to deliver what it says it will, but also the gathering and the safeguarding of the data and whoever's holding it. And I know that's a big part of what you're doing there too, isn't it?
Yeah, when I think of the big project, I tend to think of this donut, this ring, which allows many people to lean into to explore futures. From the inside, schools such as Edinburgh College of Art might be leaning in alongside the business school to really think about how they can work on interdisciplinary, future-facing, data-driven, challenge-based projects. Some schools aren't ready to lean in yet, but those who do are already started to ask questions for themselves. On the outside, we've got partners who also want to lean in to EFI and find out how they might make their businesses more sustainable. But you're right. It's all about this this space, this ring, I call it, a donut of these properties. But around the edges, I do think we need two strong guiding principles, one being data ethics to support and ensure that the trust of the public and the students and the academics and partners who are investing in EFI trust that if we stand up any new businesses, new software, new programs, new research, that it's underpinned with a trustworthy approach to the ethical management of data. And then another one is the climate. Let's operate within some planetary boundaries. So these two principles, data ethics and climate, allow us to do, I think, communicate a sense of trust that whatever takes place between those two boundaries can be playful, open, co-creative, exciting, experimental, but it's also doing it within a trust framework that secures futures which are fair and worth the investment. But trust is important.
It sounds so exciting. And I think what's so forward thinking about it is this collaborative interdisciplinarity, if you like, you know, getting academia around the same table as industry and third sector and public sector. Is this something that people are getting more used to, or do we still need to encourage it?
I think it's a journey, to be honest, Kim. We go on this journey and we're taking a 400-year-old university on this journey, which, to be honest, it's always had a playbook of excellence in silos, whether it's physics, whether it's chemistry, whether it's law, whether it's the arts. And it is a journey toward understanding what the future-facing university wants to look like and be like. And we do want it to be co-creative. We want to listen to the challenges that are facing communities as well as industry to co-create the research challenges. And I think it's best left as a process. I think we've got lots of ways that we're learning about how to bring together people in participatory forms, workshops. We have lots of methods, including, believe it or not, playing cards, which are uniquely designed, board games, participatory workshops that help people lean into this idea that talking to others, listening to others will always elicit really interesting shared challenges, but also through the eyes of others. And EFI does want to make sure it's always working with others to define its research and teaching.
And even though the building won't open for another, I don't know, 6-9 months, when are you hoping to open to the public?
I think it's a series of phased openings, to be honest. I think I'm hoping to tread the floorboards by May or June next year, so early summer, and then hopefully inviting our first cohort of master's students who are starting this September, maybe to finish their dissertations in the building over next summer, 2023, and then looking to bring in the new students in September 23, and then probably moving the research groups in slowly through that period with tenants and partners, hopefully taking space up in January 24. So it's a slow process. I'm very much a believer in an agile approach, thinking that we don't want to be the thing that we aim to be first. So I tend to use the idea of the skateboard. Let's pretend we're on a skateboard first, then we'll get to the bicycle, think about a tuk-tuk, and then maybe we'll be the Tesla or the fully functioning car in a few years' time. So it precisely about, but let's open the building with a view to testing it and living with it as though it's almost a piece of clothing rather than assuming it's a fully functioning building.
Well, that's what's so interesting. I mean, the work has already started. The EFI output has already started in other physical places on the university campus and online as well. Can you think of anything that's already been achieved that you're excited to build on?
Sure, it is amazing, actually. We have been a relatively high-functioning virtual centre, a virtual institute for the last few years, not just because of the pandemic, but because of the nature of waiting for a building and rehearsing collaborative processes. I think probably what faces us now is the most exciting is that we launched 6 programmes, master's programmes last year, and the students are now arriving for those programmes. So in a week's time, probably in 7 days' time from today, I'll be standing up with colleagues in teaching across all of our research and teaching affiliates and actually meeting about 150 students, whether that's online or in person. We're hot housing them together. So in many ways, that shared experience of, wow, you're the first citizens, the first students of EFI is incredibly exciting, and credit to the team who study it up. Of course, then we've got further tranches, another 4 programmes going through approval now to then introduce more programmes into the 23. And we're also just designing 24 ahead. So I think it's, yeah, this cycle of delivery, moving from something that was a very virtual abstract idea, suddenly it moving into making it very, very real. And the real is in the people. The people who we meet, who we collaborate with, talking to future tenants is super exciting about what they expect and what they want. So it becomes real because we have new people coming in, and that's when that's super exciting.
It's definitely going to be a fantastic hub for Edinburgh and Scotland and globally, I'm sure. And if people are listening thinking, gosh, I'd love to be involved with this, what kinds of partners or tenants are you looking to work with? How would they get involved?
Well, we'd like to offer it. I think they're planning on a membership model, actually. So, and I'm not sure it'll be gold, silver and bronze, but this idea, the premier membership would be an anchor tenant, someone who's in for the long haul. They understand our teaching community, student community, as well as the research, the high powered professors and researchers they'll be associated with, as well as the opportunity to sit alongside other companies inside the building. So the anchor tenants are really important to us. Now, we're going back to the city and region deal theme. So we want tenants and partners who are connected to public services, fintech and financial services, tourism and festivals, and the creative industries. So we're talking to partners at the moment. But on the other hand, in complement to anchor tenants, we also want small, medium-sized businesses that want to be associated. We know that working practices are changing. So it might be that people listening have got offices where they're changing their relationship with the city. Maybe they're only coming into the city one or two times a week now. Maybe EFI has some of the most extraordinary spaces that people want to revisit when they do come together in the cities, co-creative studios, meeting rooms, large-scale tech-equipped offices, which maybe businesses are thinking about cutting back on. So we, and then I think there's the nano, the freelancers, the tiny businesses who we think will also want to be in around not just the building, but around the people, the talent from the students, the researchers, and the other businesses. So I think there's a whole bunch of ways of thinking about it's a lifelong cultural innovation space in which many businesses could lean in according to their interests, their capacity, and realistically their finances. Do they want a light touch membership where they get to be and host meetups, or do they want to be in the building permanently? So I'm hoping that the packages are really sliced according to what people need and can afford, but also what they see as being the benefit of being in a fascinating building, mixed culture of teaching, community, social, public services with talent and creativity.
It's just so pertinent. If you think about Mark Logan's report about the technology ecosystem in Scotland, and one of the points that he made was the importance of this market square where you can collide all the knowledge and skills and experience in the one place. And it just sounds like that's what EFI is. I mean, people must be so excited to get involved. Has that been the feedback that you've had?
I think so. I think what's really fantastic is this open to all principle that we know that innovation, and Mark spoke about this in some ways, that there are various ramps into innovation. So realistically, getting from even beginning to talk about developing a startup all the way through to scaling up and sustaining, it needs different entry points and it needs different scaffolding to support that. And I think colleagues in the Robotarium or Bayes know that they're at a higher level of entry when you want to talk AI and machine learning, natural language processing. They know that when you talk to them directly across data science, that the literacy is quite high to support high-end startups leading towards scale-ups. And EFI want to be part of that funnel, or they want to be at the early part of that ramp. So really allowing everyone to come in, not to be scared by the terms of data science, data-driven informatics, but actually let everybody in and through open conversation begin to socialize and develop literacies. What we hope then will allow us to signpost them on if they want to stay and go down the AI rabbit hole. Then look, you've got brilliant partners in Bayes. If you want to head into population health studies, Usher is going to really support that. And of course, back into the school. So really that open to all principle is a ramp for everyone to come in from particular sectors to really start talking about and learning what data-driven innovation is going to do to them, their business, their theatre, and thinking out how it becomes part of them owning part of the challenges, the futures.
Oh, it's just so nice to hear such a positive vision of the future. It's not always what we hear and see in the media. So I thank you for that. Is there anything else that you'd like people to know about EFI?
Well, I suppose in respect to that, I think we now have a social, environmental and economic license or contract with the public. So whoever's on the call, I want to make sure that we don't look like a university retracting to our campus, that we suddenly feel like we've got a gateway, we've got a bridge into different communities who might never have thought about leaning into a university before. And actually, what does that mean? What does it look like to then co-design futures, futures that we all really care about? We've got this extraordinary gift, of course, which it is and was an old infirmary. So I suspect many people are listening. And many people I talk to when I give public presentations, half of them just want to get back in and find out where their parents were cared for, maybe where they were born. So this extraordinary gift for me and the team is that we already have a social license, a contract with the city, which I'm hoping then people will want to come in. They'll want to walk the floors because they were in the building way before me and colleagues were. So there's a lovely gift to then start talking about how we co-design and co-create futures that we all care about. So let's find out when we open.
Thanks for listening. And don't forget to check out the other podcasts in this series. To find out more about the Data-Driven Innovation Programme, just go to ddi.ac.uk, or you can follow on Twitter at Data Capital Ed.